When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
But yeah, it is the
right boys.
The right outcome.
Boys, Phil, Tim, yeah. You've got to stop talking. Right. You've pretty much done a whole podcast and we've recorded nothing.
All right. Okay.
Right. Here we go.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast on the eggiest day of the year, the Easter weekend.
Oh, yeah.
European Championship Cup and Challenge Cup quarterfinals. So we're back in the rugby dungeon on Easter Monday, giving up this holy day, guys, and a family day.
He has risen.
Just to be with you, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. How are you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thank you, Tim.
Philip, happy Easter.
Happy Easter, Tim.
Right, what a weekend. What have you been up to? I don't even know where you've been. All I know is Phil's lost a phone.
It's a blur, mate. It's a blur. I've been out three times over Easter, which is unheard of for a man of 33. I feel incredibly hungover. And somewhere in that, I've played a game of rugby. I've watched at least three games. I've watched some rugby league. Done all sorts, mate.
Are your missus and child away?
Child is currently being looked after by some neighbours. Playing and Lady next door.
Ah. All right, okay, so they were here while you had three nights out and watched loads of rugby. That's impressive, mate. That's good going.
Yeah, it is. It's not bad, is it?
Phil?
I've been walking in North Wales.
Lovely. Hence, you had a lack of signal for a lot of it.
Well, it's not lack of signal. My 2.5-year-old phone just decided to give up the ghost. It's been kind of on its last legs for a while, and I've been eking it out, and then just gave up on Friday afternoon. So, no signal. Been disconnected from you two via WhatsApp, but very much connected into the rugby world by watching every game.
Excellent. Same. And I had the joy of watching a lot of the games just on a phone on some patchy Wi-Fi in the Forest of Dean.
Very nice.
Well, you've done some travelling.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Llanelli. Sorry, how am I going to say that? Llanelli.
I've got a serious question for you about that, right?
It's a bloody long way away from anywhere, that place.
Isn't it?
My goodness me. You sort of think, oh, it's just a little bit past Cardiff.
No. So, yeah, I have this experience because I'm from North Wales. And basically, you know, wherever you're going, add the extra hour just to get out of North Wales.
Oh.
Is that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And now, here's a serious question for you about Llanelli. Has that stadium ever been full? I mean, I know it was full on the weekend, but have you ever seen it full besides that?
Never seen it full. I believe for the final pool match, it may have been full, but this had an extra 1,000 seats put in.
Did it?
To meet the minimum standard criteria for a quarterfinal venue. They had to put extra seats in front of the two stands at each end.
I did not know that.
Were they just like dining room chairs from the...
yeah.
The owners.
Those school benches.
So I think
it was rammed and rocking.
Good, because I think the one thing Wales lacks is a ground with real atmosphere. I mean, Cardiff don't do it, Ospreys don't really do it, Dragons are Dragons. But Llanelli, I really think, or Scarlets, I should call them, that could be like Wales' Munster.
Yes.
If they could just get it together and people start supporting that team, I think the enthusiasm is slowly returning.
I think you could tell from the way that coaches and players and other people around spoke about that game. It's clearly very, very rare to have it even remotely anywhere near full.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I don't know how achievable it is to expect that stadium to happen outside of big occasions like that.
Well, they're playing nice rugby. They're successful. That's all you need, really.
They do.
It is. They're winning things.
So why aren't people watching Pro 14 games there?
I couldn't say. I mean, they do watch some Pro 14 games, don't they? I mean, like, well, Munster and Leinster do, all right?
You can't expect them. If they were averaging 3,000 or 4,000, I don't know what it is, but let's say 4 years ago they're averaging 3,000, 4,000. They might now be averaging 5,000, 6,000, which is, it's all the correct progression.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that.
Well, success in nice rugby will basically close down this myopic club versus region debate, which these idiots continually have over and over again.
Well, the Scarlets, and the
basically stifles Welsh rugby.
The Scarlets region has it, and Cardiff, I suppose, has that benefit of it's not amalgamated anything. It's just stayed. It was Llanelli Scarlets, and now it's Scarlets for the region. But effectively, it's the same team.
Yeah, I never used to like Scarlets because they used to. They used to tell me that they were my region. It was a four-hour bloody car ride from Llandudno to Parky Scarlets. No thanks, I'm good. Or Straddy Park back in the day.
Just generally, the weekend's games were absolutely outstanding.
Weren't they?
I mean, probably, well, Leinster Saracens was the one where the result was decided the soonest. But even then, that took 55 minutes before
it was that
Leinster
James,
really pressed the foot down.
It was that James Lowe try that really sealed that one, wasn't it?
Shall we talk about the first game then, the Scarlets game? Because that for me was the most enjoyable.
Do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. I thought like just the intelligence of the Scarlets forwards was not the intelligence, just the guile. I can never say
they were streetwise.
Yeah,
I'll give them that. Like they were collapsing malls illegally all over the place.
But
they played. They played the.
Was it McLeod?
They managed it brilliantly.
Who was the second row? Like, he just nips in front of the line-out jumper, steals the ball, just like he's a kid in a schoolyard.
Probably more than like
Cheers.
A Tagbird.
I love that.
Yeah, his
no,
line.
It was a replacement. I'm sure. It was McLeod. Tagbird had an amazing game.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing game.
Byrne was exceptional.
I'm not even sure he could do that for another team. I think it's just the way the Scarlets team is put together.
We're going to see
what they ask
year,
him to do.
We?
Yeah.
He's not a big physical presence, is he? Or is he?
He's not enormous. Oh, he doesn't look enormous.
No. He just looks like a bloke. He looks like a slightly larger than average bloke.
But he's really intelligent.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got
that speed
of mind. So he does beautiful offloads. He cuts really intelligent lines, which is why he manages to make ground, because he's not trying to run over someone. He'll find the space and he'll time it well. And he makes brilliant decisions in line-out. So again, he's like Richie McCaw. With breakdowns, he's like that in mall defence. He'll quite often be just about legal, possibly illegal, but manages to get away with it.
Yeah.
So Scarlets are actually, despite all their offloading and beautiful rugby, they're actually a very well-balanced team. I mean, the improvement throughout the whole team is magnificent. The guy who stood out for me what's his name? Samson Lee. Because he's just got so much better. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's not... a world-beating tight prop, but you can scrimmage well, and he now contributes an awful lot more.
Well, they did well in the scrum, bearing in mind La Rochelle are the best in the top 14.
So yeah,
is that right?
So two things on that. So Samson Lee can actually handle the ball, which I never thought I'd say.
Yeah,
they actually use him as that pivot, as they use everyone. But he's adept at that.
They can all do it,
but they're scrimmaging. So they were talking before the game about the strength and La Rochelle being number one. And just the size of that front row is enormous.
Mm.
And Scarlets held them. At times, Scarlets were getting under them and on top of them.
Well, the wake-up call for me for Scarlets was when they absolutely destroyed Bath in the scrum. Bath came to town with Henry Thomas, Tom Dunn and... Ben Obano. These are all highly rated future England guys, if not already England guys in the case of Henry Thomas. And they just got absolutely annihilated. So, a far more balanced team than...
Their scramble defence was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Very much like Wales have had that in their locker for quite a few years now. Scarlets have definitely got that, where they just work rate is immense. I did think, my gut feeling overall was they very much, Scarlets, they deserved to win because they were smarter, shrewder, more together.
Mm.
They definitely got the rub of the green decisions wise. My general sense stood there watching it was I don't know, it felt like they were getting the 50-50s go their way.
Yeah.
Well, that's why, home advantage.
That's why you play at home.
Home advantage. Scarlets, so you said it was a really enjoyable game.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the game. I would have been frustrated if I were a Scarlets fan were it not for the last 20 minutes where they kind of broke free, because there was so many times. So they only scored the first try after 61 minutes. There's so many times before that where they just got a few phases together. they're just starting to make the yard and getting the breaks and offloads, and either a big hit would come in from La Rochelle, or uncharacteristically from what I've seen in the Scarlets this year and last year, they'd put the ball down, they'd knock on, the ball wouldn't quite go to hand. And you kind of felt until they got that try after 61 minutes that this could go either way.
Yeah.
It's just, it might not quite be their day.
Well, La Rochelle, in fairness, basically penalised themselves out of the game. I mean, for the first half, I think it was all Scarlet's kicks, which were keeping them in the game.
As I say, generally speaking, yeah, their indiscipline was poor. I think they held their hands up and said that. And it cost them. There were some 50-50s that I thought. There were some that even got penalised against La Rochelle that, in my opinion, should have been an exact 100% reversal. Yeah, there were several.
And Bottier going off early.
But even before the game, like Scarlets had 12 full internationals that had played in the Six Nations into their side that had mostly, bar a couple of players, all had a week off.
Mm. Yeah,
haven't played for Scarlets since the game against Toulon.
I'm not a fan of that at all. But it seems to be working.
But that's the reality. La Rochelle, on the other hand, most of their team, the vast majority of their team, I think 12 of them, played last week against Bordeaux in a massively important league game, and they're missing Eaton, yep. Victor Vito.
That's the one.
Brock James.
Ryan
Lamb.
Ryan Lamb was travelling reserve, but they're missing fly halves. They're missing really important players. I'm forgetting some of the others, but they're missing massively important players.
Well, they didn't even start Gordon. I don't know why.
He's only just coming back from injury. But he looks class when he came
up. He's bloody brilliant.
Yeah. So I think another day, La Rochelle, actually, for a first run in the Champions Cup, quarterfinal, and not really losing until the last 10 minutes properly.
They're not bad, are they?
No.
They're not bad at all.
It's been a good year.
Yeah. But Scarlet's a very exciting team to go forward. And the number of Welsh internationals they've got.
And they will get better.
Yeah, I reckon. Well, so the things I'm thinking now is, how do they keep this team together? I mean, is there really enough financial backing in Wales to keep all these lads and give them new contracts? I mean, they're going to be losing Barkley, they're going to be losing Byrne. That's massive. That is absolutely huge. So what are they going to do next?
Good question.
Allegedly is going to Bath.
Yeah.
Keep hearing this over
Todd Blackadder came out. I asked Todd Blackadder about that in the Bath game the other week, and he went, absolutely no truth in it. Unless there's stuff going on that even Todd Blackadder doesn't know about.
There is lots of stuff going on with Todd Blackadder. Apparently, right, Todd Blackadder had no idea that they signed the Argentine prop. He just showed up with his kit one day. Who are you? I'm a prop boss. And that was that. So we'll wait and see.
Mm. Yeah. I think the WRU central contracting will obviously help them.
Yeah.
Because you'll get a load of those guys will be under the 60 cap limit and will have to stay, and they'll want to stay at the best region, which is Scarlets.
Yep.
So they're kind of tied.
And World Cup year.
Yeah.
12 of those guys, I'd say a couple of them were playing for other countries, but at least 10 of those guys were in the Wales squad and playing for Wales at some point. They're not going to want to risk a World Cup spot as well.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
And also the beauty that the system, the regional system and the central contracts, you've seen how well it's worked this year.
Do you know what the downside is? You've got to live in Llanelli. I mean, I'm not just saying that as a throwaway comment. You do have to live there. It's not Bath, is it? You know, it's not like playing for Sale and living in Manchester or, you know, playing for Harlequins in Richmond.
Your overheads are probably a little bit cheaper.
True. Yeah, and there's easy access to steel. That's always good, isn't it?
I bet Cubby Boy knows a few good nights out.
Yeah, so, you know, there's
I bet they had what a sort of a night out would they have had.
Oh.
Messy.
Yes.
So, just going to say, we spoke about the La Rochelle injuries. Scarlet's losing Asquith, and obviously Johnny McNichol's not there, but losing Asquith, so Cubby, and they were 6-2 split. So Cubby Boy went on the wing for 60 odd minutes.
But he did that in the semi-final last year, the Pro 12 semi-final.
He did.
And they did have a back three on the bench that they could have brought on and moved Halfpenny to wing. Who was the fullback? Dan Jones, they could have put on fly half, Patchell to fullback.
So I don't understand the big deal about, like, you're a flanker, therefore you can't play wing. Rugby's rugby. And I actually think for the Scarlets, it probably is easier because they do seem to all be able to play the ball a bit.
The way that Scarlets play, it probably is easier.
I mean, I'd love to know what they do in training.
You do see, there's times where you see a forward out in the backs or vice versa, Johnny May packing down at flanker, and you just think, you have not got a clue You have never, literally never in training or any game have you ever stood in that position when that thing has happened.
Yeah,
James Davis's sevens experience, knowing when to drift, when to give space, when to step in and hit.
Yeah.
Those basic decisions is like bread and butter sevens, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also, this was, for La Rochelle and Scarlets, the pressure of this game meant there was more kicking than usual. There wasn't as much time with ball in hand. So it was, and for a back row doing kick chase, he's absolutely fine with that kind of stuff, isn't he? That's his bread and butter.
Yeah, and actually turnovers out wide is where a lot of turnovers. I'm just amazed that we don't see more positional swaps in rugby and how people are so wedded to a certain position. I mean, it is just rugby.
There was a period when off scrums, some people used to put their number eight at inside centre and take a pop off nine, things like that. I can't remember who was the number eight that used to do that.
I tell you who you're thinking of. You're thinking of Stephen Armitage when he played for Irish.
That's right. They used to do
Mike
that. Yeah,
Cass
you're right.
Flank.
That's right.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, this is kind of indicative of how much the game has changed. But they were talking about England, you know, when they obviously won the World Cup and they were building, and how all their players are interchangeable in all these different positions. Austin Healey once said, we'll have a 9 and a 10, and then all the other guys will just slot in around. You know, they actually really believe this. And some of the talk was, why don't we use Will Greenwood in the lineup? Because he's massive.
He's like 6'5", isn't he?
Well, he's 6'4". 6'5". But like 6'4" wouldn't even get you on the flank now. you might be struggling. So, yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
The one other thing to mention, so I just mentioned the kicking of both teams. They kicked more than they normally would do. The kicking of the scrum half, kicking out of hand, the box kicking of the La Rochelle scrum half was awful. But they persisted with it.
Mm.
So slow, either way too deep or poorly directed, just straight down the throats of.
Dreadful.
And he's got to outsmart Halfpenny as well. It's
Halfpenny
not an easy
and
job.
Steph Evans and Patchell drops back there, Cubby Boy's back there. Mm. Yeah.
But enjoyable. How do you think? I think Scarlets can beat Leinster. I don't know if they can win the whole thing, but they can definitely beat Leinster.
They beat them last year.
They beat them last year.
Pro 12.
They breezed past them in the Pro 12.
I'm not altogether happy with these neutral but home country semi-finals, but it being at the Aviva Stadium, which is where Leinster play their big games all the time.
Well, I only got a problem, which is they have very little infrastructure.
No, I understand.
Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's where it's going to be. If you had a big enough stadium, you can do that too.
No, because it has to be a neutral in the home country. So you can't have... So, for example, Welford Road is big enough, but they would have to move it to Coventry or somewhere else. Yeah.
So they'd have to. So Leicester would have to play at the Rico or somewhere.
So yeah. Racing are playing in Bordeaux, I think it is.
That is ridiculous.
So they can't move... Yeah. It's
so you can use your home country, but not your home stadium.
So Saracens...
You get home country, not home... In the Challenge Cup, it's home stadium. In the Champions Cup, it's home country.
The only way... I mean, I guess it makes sense because it does add to a sense of occasion. You've all got to travel somewhere. They used to do that with the FA Cup.
They pick bigger venues because they can fill them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's nothing... It doesn't get much bigger than Paris in their brand new stadium indoors.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about as big as it gets, I would have thought.
But I assume it's the neutral nature of it. So had Saracens won, the game would have been at the Rico.
Would it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Ah.
So that being the case, Leinster getting a game at the stadium that they play in
almost half the time.
It seems a little unfair.
I mean, I don't care.
It's what, 3 miles from their regular ground?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. It shouldn't make a difference because you'd imagine every single Saracen season ticket holder plus everyone else would make the hour and a half journey to Coventry. If it was going to be moved to there.
And it is a sense of occasion. They used to do it with the FA Cup semi-final. They used to play it in Villa Park, come what may. So, I don't really
care. Even if Aston Villa were playing?
No. Oh, good point. Don't know.
Never really happened, did it?
Don't know.
Never had to cross that bridge.
Did you guys watch the other two? Because I've only seen... the Scarlets game and the Saracens game. Oh, I saw the end of the Munster game. Thank God I saw the end of that.
Yeah, I watched the Munster. I watched Munster and Clermont.
Did you see the beginning of the Munster game?
I have seen the beginning actually.
Let's talk Munster till on then.
Yes.
I thought this was a fantastic game.
This was, in terms of atmosphere and occasion, this was exceptional, and the finish was as good as any game you'll ever get.
Word. It was so good. Francois Tranduc can add his name to the list. Well, I'm sure he's appeared on that list many, many times, but important players who completely shat the bed at the crucial moment. Ronan O'Gara for the Lions in South Africa. Was it Yashvili at the end of the pool stages for Claremont when if they'd have taken a penalty, they would have...
No, that was Morgan Parra.
Morgan Parra, that's it.
Yeah.
If he'd have taken the 3 points, they'd have gone through ahead of Exeter and just had a brain fart. Total brain dead moment. Tranduc, stick it in row Z.
Yeah. But he made the mistake a few weeks ago when he was playing for France. Exactly the same mistake.
Did you see Chris Ashton in his post-match chat?
I've not seen it.
He just chucked Tranduc under the bus.
Did he?
Just said, yeah, some players should have just dealt with it, got the ball out, but they didn't.
I spoke about the kind of... Toulon have got the big names, but not the leadership.
Yeah.
And that... So even if you miss touch there, if you've got a good kick chase, if you've got the boys leading the line, shut him down on the... Well, at worst, the 22. At best, the kind of 10-metre line. And there was... two or three people chasing that kick. Everyone else had switched off.
How many times have you said that, coaching Toc H, JB? No such thing as a bad kick, only a bad chase.
All the time, mate. But it was a bad chase.
It was a bad chase. Tuisova overran. It wasn't connected to the two defenders with him.
Yeah.
Gave Conway the little dog leg to open up with. The two players that were with him were both front five forwards, I think. And everyone else was just buggered up. They were just ambling up from...
Yeah, picking the nose, staring into space.
That said, let's take nothing away from the finish.
Bloody
exceptional
hell.
Finish.
Wow. I think Andrew Conway had that in him. I thought he was a kick chase extraordinaire. I mean, I really rate him. I think he's a very, very good winger. He has excellent fundamentals, but didn't see him being able to do that.
No one wearing a 1980s knee brace should be able to run like that. That's some Forrest Gump stuff going on that left leg of his.
Yeah, looks like Stone Cold, runs like Stone Cold. it was amazing. I think it's basically one of those classic tries now. That's which is going to be trotted out over and over again.
The commentary from the Irish broadcaster was amazing. I'll try and find it. It's so good. It's how you want commentary to be. That said, I will say that Sky Sports had Alan Quinlan, who you could not find a more one-eyed.
I have no problem with it.
Which is fine, but there was one point when, and we'll get onto these slightly contentious decisions, there was one point where Stuart Barnes was trying to, go through the process of understanding the decision that's going to be made by a TMO. And when Stuart Barnes said, oh, but of course, this point maybe is one we need to think about, Stuart Barnes then said, he went, as Alan Quinlan hits me. He's clearly in the commentary box going, shut up, Stuart, shut up. Don't say anything that's going to go against my team.
I thought it was interesting having Brian O'Driscoll, who did a very good job of trying to be neutral. Well, actually, it is an easy job when your team's winning, but having him doing the Leinster game.
Yeah, he's very good. So I listened to a lot of because I was driving, I listened to a lot of the Leinster game, Leinster Saracens, on Radio 5 Live or 5 Live Extra, whichever it was, with Jamie Heaslip in commentary.
Oh, yeah.
He was very, very good.
He's a good communicator.
Really, really good communicator. I've not heard that much from him before. I've seen little bits. He was really interested. He was clearly wanting Leicester to win, and he admitted as such. But he was a really fair pundit. Very, very, very good. Very enjoyable.
I think I've got the commentary.
Pumps this one, kicks it towards touch across far side. However, Conway stopped him from going in. Conway has it.
Amazing stuff.
So good.
Amazing stuff.
I love it.
So why don't you take a break from the games and talk about some other news?
Well, briefly, there's a couple of important decisions, I think, which were in this Munster game. Because I think this was the one where the losing team would feel most disappointed by losing.
There's a couple of decisions in the Claremont game in front of that home crowd.
Two French sides that haven't made the semi-finals will probably feel the most aggrieved. And Toulon gave a great account of themselves at Thomas Park.
Yeah.
And they did. You're right, I think the leadership was probably and those big important decision making men at important moments makes the difference, and that's what happens at
this
level.
Yeah, but level. You know what? Like they could have bloody, you know, Winston Churchill playing tight prop, and Trandrug's still not going to hit touch. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but they have Johnny Wilkinson at fly half.
It's the compounding, isn't it?
They have Johnny Wilkinson at fly half, and he doesn't miss touch.
And it's not one mistake. It's two. When you ever read about Alpha Piper or any like
Swiss cheesing.
Yeah, any like the Concorde crash and anything like that. It's never just one thing. It's always layers upon layers of failures. And that's exactly what the Conway try was. You fail to miss touch and you compound it with a bad kick. And then you compound that with no one following up the bad kick chase.
Ugh, what a mess. Yeah. What a mess.
Yeah, so let's talk about Conor Murray. Right. What a season he's having and what a big moment for him. He took that try on Toulon's. I think it was Keatley had put a little grubber through. Toulon were on their own line. There was going to be the grubber kick from the nine or whatever. Conor Murray spotted that Guillaume Girardeau had played the ball, signaled to the ref, that was a knock-on, and then just took it upon himself, didn't wait to be asked. And like a good player, seek forgiveness, don't ask permission.
Correct.
Yep. He went, grabbed the ball, put it over the line, and after a 7-minute interlude with the TMO, the try was awarded. Now, so if you haven't seen it, go and watch it. But effectively, Guillaume Girardeau had the ball at the back of the Toulon ruck, right on his own line. He played the ball.
Yeah.
He dropped it.
He played the ball, dropped it. Then it settled again by his feet. Conor Murray picked it up and scored. Now, Nigel Owens went through the process of... He made sure Conor Murray was onside. He made sure everything else was going on. The one decision that took the most amount of time was Nigel Owens asking the TMO, did the ball go forward off of Guillaume Girardeau's hand? Mm. Was it a knock-on? In Nigel Owens' words, if that was a knock-on, then ball is out and it's a try. If it goes backwards, ball's not out and it's...
But it's been lifted up, so it's out.
Yeah, which is... So, you're right. Mm. So, in my mind, the correct decision was made in completely the wrong way. Because, for me, as soon as the ball is not touched with the hands, but the rule was changed a couple of years ago too, as soon as the ball is lifted, then the ruck is over. Girardeau lifted it, drops it, it doesn't go forward, or...
Even though the TMO and Nigel Owens decide that it did after a ton of replays showing clearly that it didn't.
But that is entirely irrelevant. Once he's picked up, the ruck's over, you can't then recreate a ruck with men in front of you just by kind of binding onto them, which is what Girardeau tried to do. So the ball was out.
Yeah, I'm fine with the outcome.
Yeah.
It was a farcical process because, again, unless there's a law that we're not aware of...
And it certainly wasn't explained by the commentary team if there is a law that we're not aware of.
Yeah.
So it appeared like Conor Murray, it was fair game because Guillaume Girardeau picked it up. However, Nigel Owens said, I'm only going to give this as a try and it's only out if it's a knock-on. And it 1,000,000% was not a knock-on.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's wrong on
it. It went backwards and then rolled forwards after it bounced, but that's backwards. Yeah. But anyway.
It's just a try.
Correct result, Conor Murray, quick thinking, good execution.
Yeah.
And the other one?
And the other one was in the very first minute.
Now, I do have thoughts on this one.
Which is Chris Ashton follows through a really good little kick from his Toulon teammate.
Was it Bellew who put the kick in?
Yeah, right. I think it was bobbling and it bounced up in the try area. Ashton reached up, would have about to grab it, and then presumably would have planted the ball down for a try. Simon Zebo, the covering defender, reaches with one arm and taps the ball out of Chris Ashton's way.
Okay.
Nigel Owens checked and said he wasn't deliberately knocking it into touch.
Mm.
Therefore, knock on Toulon, scrum, Munster. It was in the very first minute, 46 seconds, I think, had played. Now, I'd feel very, very hard done by if I was a Toulon fan here.
So he actually says something slightly different. He said Chris Ashton was Ziva was underneath the ball, right? So he prods it up, and then Ashton's two hands prod it forward. Okay, so in my mind, he's got it exactly right, because we don't know where that ball's. We know that Simon Zebo's knocked the ball. We know he's knocked it backwards, but we don't know if it's going to go into touch. We simply don't know.
I know from the way that Zebo played that ball. He was trying to knock that out of Ashton's way into touch.
Oh, yeah, he was definitely trying to knock it. Take this exact same scenario, right, and move him to the 22. It's a completely natural way to defend it, to knock it down, regather it and play on, right? Absolutely fine with that. We do not know, right, if that ball is going to go into touch.
Oh.
But we don't.
We do.
No, we don't.
The pace that that's going, and Zeebo Superman, Zeebo is off the floor, so there's no way he can regather that.
With one arm outstretched.
So if he does knock it into, Ashton thinks super quick, like quantum computer super super quick, and he doesn't touch our ball and Zeebo knocks it out, it's a penalty. It is a penalty try.
And it's a yellow card,
right? But undoubtedly. But because Ashton then touches it...
But it's only because Ashton had two hands on the ball that you can say with certainty he would have scored. Probably what would have happened is he knocked it out, that's probably a penalty, but he didn't have hands on the ball, so he wasn't going to score
Knocking it out of his hands isn't a penalty. Knocking it into touch is a penalty. But
he knocks
it up, and then Ashton knocks it across, which means that
knocks it on because Zeebo... knocks the ball.
If
Ashton's hands aren't there, so I think they both hit it exactly the same time.
It still isn't illegal.
No, but Zeebo at the same time is hitting it out. But if Ashton's hands aren't there, like you just said,
he's volleyballing it off the pitch.
If Ashton's hands aren't there, like you just said, then there's no penalty try because Ashton can't get it.
So I remember one with Rob Corney exactly the same, and Rob Corney is like sort of covering, and he basically knocks it into touch, and there's a lot more separation between the attacking player and the defensive player, and he got yellow carded for that. I don't know if he got a penalty try against him, but he definitely got... a yellow card.
It's interesting, because you are defending Simon Zeebo more than Simon Zeebo is defending himself.
I don't know what he said, I'm just...
The headline from Simon Zeebo is that he whispered to Chris Ashton afterwards, "I got away with that one."
Well, there you are then. I don't think he's done anything wrong, actually. Until the ball goes out, until, you know, the thing has happened, he's done nothing wrong.
I think that was a massive call. Points up, and bearing in mind it came down to 1 point after Tranduka ballsed it. I think that was a huge moment, and I think it was... I think if that didn't happen in the first minute of a game, that's a penalty try, yellow card.
Yeah, I think Nigel got that one wrong, in my opinion.
Interesting.
So Munster rode their luck, and fair play to him. And Conor Murray, quick thinking, was and Conway, wonder try, was fair enough. But you look at the stats as well. Toulon must be thinking, how did we not win that? They had 60% possession, 61% territory. They had almost double the number of yards, about 1.5 times the number of yards gained. Defenders beaten.
Defenders beaten, I've got here, 31-14. And defenders beaten is one of... So possession and territory doesn't always correlate that well. Yeah. Defenders beaten often does.
Munster made almost 3 times as many tackles. Well, 2.5 times as many tackles.
The big mistake, if you're just looking at the stats, the big thing against Toulon, which does correlate with winning and losing... Toulon conceded 20 turnovers across. So that's knocking on, that's losing the ball in possession, and that's turnovers on the ground. So you can't win
in these big European... And I guess Munster took every opportunity they had.
Yeah.
Which is what champion teams do.
Yeah.
Indeed they do. Let's talk about some of the news.
Yes. Okay.
Has anything else happened?
It's been quite a lot of...
Ulster news. Massive Ulster news. Don't know if you've heard the news coming out of Northern Ireland, but they've signed Will Addison.
Enormous news.
That was a big news for the Ulster province.
Yeah.
I wasn't convinced until April 1st that this wasn't a wind-up. I thought it was like a setup. Because I have heard rumours about Will Addison going for a long time. And then when Mike Haley went to Munster, I thought, maybe I've got this wrong.
Well, they're housemates and Bezzy mates, aren't they, those two?
Yeah, yeah. Both, I don't know if they still are, but they used to be, I think.
They used to be, yeah.
Yeah, living in Didsbury somewhere. Yeah, it wouldn't be ironic if one keeps the other one out of the Ireland team.
It's a good signing for Ulster. They need a utility back that can play across the back line. Bearing in mind they're losing Piatow, and what's his name hasn't played for ages. Tommy Bowes had to retire.
Yeah.
What's happened to Marshall? Is he still about?
And who's the footballer? Payne has been.
Yeah,
I mean Payne. He's a massive question mark over
as him. A centre fullback.
Yeah.
Repeated concussions, not played since the Lions tour, now may never play again.
Yeah. Is that right?
Fortunately, yeah. Last I read, which was only the last month, kind of 9 months later, he's still suffering with concussion symptoms. So that's not a good sign.
No, it's really not.
Yeah.
But Will Addison is a bloody fantastic player. They've got a real gemmer. It wouldn't surprise me if he does make it into the Ireland setup sooner rather than later.
And wouldn't surprise me, but it's a, looking at that Irish squad at the minute, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, outside centre, I mean, they've got options, but he's very good.
They've had three different outside centres play in the Six Nations and all do superbly well.
Yeah.
So he at best goes to fourth in the queue if you ignore Luke Marshall and Darren Cave.
He's a like-for-like replacement in a lot of ways with Jared Payne.
There are similarities.
Yeah. Defensively. I mean, maybe he's not quite as smart as Jared Payne in defence.
But he's not as experienced. But
my God, he's a brave player.
Yeah. There are times where we've kind of echoed the sentiments that we've had of, what's his name, the Bath back row? Underhill,
yes.
Where he puts
exactly
his body
right
on the line a bit too much.
Yeah, everyone that plays him, and this is good intel now for you Ulster people, if you ask them who is the bravest player that you played with, it's always Will Addison.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good pickup, and I hope he goes well.
But Ulster could be losing another couple of backs, one centre.
Oh, dear.
They've potentially got them back, but could potentially be losing them.
Right, let's just briefly deal with this. We don't want to get too deep into this one. But obviously,
I'm happy to go as deep as you want.
The massively controversial court case surrounding four players, right? But most prominently...
Well, four men, two players.
Yeah. Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding came to a conclusion where they were all acquitted of all charges, so they're not guilty as charged.
Now, hang on a second. I have to correct you there. Apparently, it's not the same as not guilty, which in my mind, it is the same as not guilty because you've got to be... Well, innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah,
but apparently not guilty.
I love living in a civilized democratic country where the presumption of innocence is there until the burden of proof is met by a legal system.
There's so many things like this I really hate. I mean, I hated their apologies at the end. I thought just two complete non-apologies about sorry about how you felt or whatever it was. Either don't say anything or go hard about being innocent, but don't do this halfway meaningless apology. The whole thing is just grubby. It's just so sordid and so. I can't see why Ulster would want to take them back now, even though they've been found not guilty. It's really left a black mark on the rugby culture there and that club, which is a very, very fine club. So I don't really know where they go from here.
So I kind of echo the sentiments, although I think Ulster will want the best players playing, but there's too much muddy water. They're just...
Can you imagine the first game back?
I don't think Ulster should... Well, no, I think the players should want to leave Northern Ireland to get a fresh start in England or France.
I've got no
or Japan or where,
going
anywhere.
Anywhere else. Yeah. I think they have to leave, whether that's forced out by Ulster or it's mutual consent, but they've got to go.
And sadly, I agree. As an Ulster fan, because I would love Paddy Jackson to be playing as he was 18 months ago, where he was actually putting some pressure on Sexton for the Irish 10 jersey. He was playing some superb rugby for both club and country. I don't think he can.
It's a really, really ugly, really horrible situation, whichever way you look at it, because there's lots of different lenses you can look at it through. None of them look particularly good.
There were lots of experts on Twitter on...
There's
absolutely horrible hashtags on both sides.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's
so polarising.
It is completely polarising. There's these idiots saying, see, that proves that they're all right and she's XYZ, which is nonsense. No. And there's other idiots saying, even though they've been found not guilty, I know what they did, kind of attitude, which is also... It's a horrible, horrible situation for everyone involved.
And now the content of private WhatsApp messages are now, public property and dictate...
Yeah, how did they get hold of them?
Well, I don't know. It's all really ugly, and as much as you'd like to go for all parties, everyone on all sides, that they can put it past them, none of them will, and it's probably ruined several lives.
Well,
for good.
I have a rugby question though. Okay, how good is Stuart Olding?
He's
like Premiership champion good, international good.
As a Hobbit lookalike.
Yeah.
he Alden is a fine player. So he's a good ball playing, intelligent on a rugby field centre. I'm trying to think of
like a 12-10 type.
Yeah, a 12-10. I'm trying to think who in the Premiership he might be likened to.
Ryan Mills?
Yeah, I'd say probably a bit better than Ryan Mills. Yeah. He's of that ilk where he can step in at 10 if he needs to, but he's adept. He's got a couple of Ireland caps and could potentially have had more given some of the injuries that they've had in
centre. So we'll come back to Alden in a moment. Who would most be suited for Paddy Jackson? I've got one club in mind who I think would definitely.
I don't think they should even entertain the UK.
Really?
Go to France.
Get to France.
Japan.
I think France is a good idea. Yeah, maybe Japan.
Do you know where I think Paddy Jackson could end up? And this is just I've got two locations for two players, right? This is the fun part. I could see him playing in Glasgow.
You know what? I actually thought Glasgow might be... Don't play the Ireland away games.
Yeah. I think Glasgow would be a great home for him. They've lost Finn Russell. You know, they could do with some 10 backup.
They've got Jackson. So he doesn't... Paddy Jackson is too good as to be a backup.
Yeah.
He's such a good player. But they've got Peter Horn. They've got the other Jackson.
However you say his name.
Yeah.
So I think, and here's the other one, right? So obviously, I'm going to say this, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, God.
It wouldn't surprise me if Alding swaps with Addison and he comes the other way. Sale have only got a couple of fly half options. They've lost Haley. They've lost Addison. Well, Haley doesn't really matter. Inside centre, they've only got Jennings and Luke James. James.
Do you not think Steve Diamond has enough on his plate with Denny Solomona?
Oh yeah.
well, so far,
with the alleged actions, in the game against Worcester.
Yeah. Look, if you're going to get a collection of, idiots, just go and get a collection of idiots. Yeah. You know, really own it.
Go big or go home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, bring back Sippers, not for the rugby, just for the banter.
Sippers social secretary for next year.
You know, bring them all in, own it. That's your identity. He would fit in.
Right, something else. Another story off of the away from the games, which we can return to shortly. The Spain situation gets murkier and murkier and murkier. Bearing in mind that this weekend, or in fact, is it meant to be this weekend, or is it might even be on Thursday? I think, or it might even be Wednesday. The game is due or was due to happen between Portugal and Spain.
Oh.
Now, what's happened is the Rugby Europe or the Federation of European Rugby, or whichever it is, the people that have overseen this, have twice in the last 2 weeks set a date to get together and talk about this and not been able to resolve it and then pushed it back again. And I think there is a meeting happening early this week, possibly tomorrow.
It feels overdue because we've had a couple of weeks where... Nothing has changed. World Rugby side, nothing has changed.
Well, now it's interesting you mentioned World Rugby. Now, one thing World Rugby did a couple of weeks ago, and I wonder if they'd have done this, if they'd have known how this was going to play out. They demoted or they scratched the results for Tahiti in one of the lower competitions and stopped them from being promoted to the next tier up because of an ineligible player. Yep. They scratched all their results for the whole of that competition and said, right, no, you fielded ineligible players, you can't, that's it, your results are void, therefore someone else gets promoted. Now, Belgium fielded an ineligible player, potentially, quite possibly. That one's a 50-50 touch-and-go
one. Okay, I've seen what
you're saying. Accusation has been made that Spain fielded an ineligible player. However, there are some very grey, murky areas where actually... It looks like that one would not be upheld, and it's fine because of the year in which some guidelines changed, and it looks like that one would be okay. The one that pretty much looks black and white is the Romanian player, Fau Casilevia or something like that. He's a centre.
Strong Romanian name.
Yeah. And he played for Tonga at Sevens.
Well, I assume the the rugby journalist world are all hard at work, right?
Well, so that one there is, it looks like pretty much, it looks from what I can gather, and I've tried to read around and find various sources and stuff, it looks like pretty nailed on, Romania fielded an ineligible player. Bearing in mind what World Rugby did with Tahiti, it would be pretty hard for them not to follow that up.
With exactly the same sanctions.
So, yeah. Who knows? No one still knows what's going on. It's a total mess. Augustin Pichot has sort of said, we are looking into this. We are going to get the right result, etc. But
have I told you? I've told you about the messages that I've had.
You kind of hinted at them.
Yeah. So I've received some information, and I can't nail it down. I can't get like a second source. I can't stand the thing up. But effectively, a lot of people saying. There were claims that it was that the Romania result was quote unquote sorted, and these were the boasts within the Romania camp itself. But the individual concerned isn't willing to come forward.
I think, to be fair, had Spain turned up and played well, it would have been an irrelevant.
They played
terribly.
No way. 24 penalties to 4 or whatever.
28-5, something like that.
It's unheard of, right? And furthermore, that referee has had his performance. Reviewed now, and he will not be returning to ref at that level. So, there is no way. I think the history books will show this was actually a crooked game.
I can't wait. I can't wait for this to come out. And well, potentially, an ineligible player might be a very black and white way to get to the outcome.
A different route to the correct outcome.
But do you know what? It shouldn't be a different route. They should confront the actual problem, which is. On the face of it, corruption. They've corrupted the game. And if Romania show up at that tournament, it's an absolute farce and it undermines the whole World Cup. So, going down the ineligible player route is a nonsense, because now what we're going to have is a set of standards where everyone's going to be digging around looking for ineligible players in the lower tiers, where maybe the compliance isn't as hot as it should be, and it's just going to be a load of unintended consequences.
Well, I don't understand why there's not a database that's really easy, and every player that's registered for an international team is on this database, and it's pretty clear there's a record of they played, therefore, like a simple automatic flow chart. No, yes, fine, okay, yes. And it's not down to the countries to manage, are you eligible, are you not ineligible? Because this guy for Romania played for a couple of minutes in one sevens match for
Madness, isn't it?
Tonga.
I think, right, that international eligibility rules now should be: did you play for the first team? Yes or no. Was it 15s? Yes or no. None of this A-team nonsense. None of this under-20s. If they're good enough, they're good enough, and you have to give them a full cap. And that's the only way that you qualified. Sevens doesn't count. A-team doesn't count. Under-18s, under-21s, all absolute nonsense. It's first team or nothing.
Well, we were out in Madrid, and we've been following Spain for quite some time now. We were there at the very start, before it was trendy to be writing and talking about Spain. We're like the rugby hipsters.
Correct.
When it comes to tier 2 rugby. But everyone seems to be into this, and even some of the prominent rugby journalists are getting on board with this, which led to some interesting moments
this week yesterday
when... Now, I don't know if Stephen Jones, of the times, had been...
Of times fame.
Had been having a drink, or whether this is just as belligerent and cantankerous as he is. But there was a really interesting back and forth on Twitter between... Tier 2 Rugby, which is not an official account, it's just what they're called. They're a Twitter account that follow and try and
promote
Tier
2 enthusiasts, much like ourselves.
They get in touch with us quite a lot. And they pointed out some inaccuracies in Stephen Jones's Times column. Now, my experience with everyone that I've met that writes for the Times, they are, I believe, the best team. Owen Slot's fantastic.
Yep.
Alex Lowe, a brilliant bloke and a great mind. You've got Ben Kay, Stuart Barnes, a part of that. Stephen Jones as well. Stephen Jones, I think we've all been blocked by him.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, not seen a Stephen Jones.
I haven't had any interaction
with
him, still got blocked by him.
Well, yep. I think we got caught in the crossfire.
Yeah. Someone tagged me into a tweet, and therefore I'm blocked.
Yeah,
yeah.
It seems like his style.
I wonder if he uses blocking software. I'm not joking. I wonder if he actually uses, like, block all followers of this account.
No, I think it's the blocking is anyone who gives an opinion, reasoned or unreasoned, passionate or impartial, anyone who gives an opinion that is not what Stephen Jones wants to hear gets blocked.
Yes.
And anyone who gives an opinion that he doesn't agree with gets called names by Stephen Jones or gets belittled. Come back when you've got more followers.
Perfect.
You lose.
Ideal. I love it.
That seems to be his approach. But anyway, so Tier 2 Rugby pointed out some inaccuracies in Stephen Jones's Times column about Spain-Romania and the situation there. And in response to them, Stephen Jones wrote this to one person who wasn't saying you're a liar, wasn't saying you're awful, just said there's some inaccuracies here, this is what's inaccurate. He says, pal, if I were you, I would take this post down immediately, because when news company legal department get to you, your feet won't touch the ground. Everything in pieces is double checked and checks out. I will give you till 1500 today UK. Got it? So he's now I work for I have the same legal team that would represent my interests when Ooh. I work at Virgin Radio. Mm-hmm. So, and I can't imagine threatening people on Twitter on their behalf. My legal team is going to be in touch with you at 3:00.
I'd love to have a legal team. I'd love to lawyer up.
Anyway, but it backed and forth, and Tier 2 Rugby said, well, remove the inaccuracies from the article and then I'll remove my tweet. He says, confirm by 1500 that you've removed this post. And then at 3:03, you have 3 minutes. Our view is that what you wrote is defamatory. Delete now. So he's now said our view.
Ooh. Yeah.
Like he's got people.
So what was written? Let's find out. What was he defaming them with?
Well, the inaccuracies were from Tier 2 Rugby that they were saying, firstly, the Romanian player you refer to is a centre, not a fly half.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Secondly, it doesn't matter about whether... he said it was about that you're still captured if you play for a sevens international team, regardless of what the capture team is, A or under 21s or under 20s. Or
okay.
Whatever. So those are the 2 points he said. So that player is definitely ineligible. These are the two reasons why.
And why is that difference to what Stephen Jones said? He said he was a... this is so petty. He said that he was a fly half.
He said he was a fly half.
Oh, wow.
And
oh, wow.
And he said that... I think he basically said that he hadn't played for the capture team for Tonga. He'd only played for the sevens team. But by playing for a sevens international side, you are captured.
Is that right?
I think that's right.
Hmm. Because there was talk of... I'm sure there's talk of Carl Ferns. I'm sure...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
Let's talk. I mean, I don't know if you can still do it now, but Armitage.
An Olympic event.
Yeah.
Yeah, that loophole got closed pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly.
There was about 6 months where that was an option.
I'd love to see a sevens team rock up for an Olympic qualifier with Carl Ferns and Stefan Armitage in it.
Well, that was in the run-up to the 2015 World Cup, and France got together this, it was either 70-man or 90-man squad of basically every single international potential player playing in France, including the Armitages.
Amazing. Absolutely astounding work yeah. by France.
So that was the most ridiculous thing about the Stephen Jones thing. The guy was going, yeah, you're right, he's ineligible, but he's not ineligible for the reason you're saying. It's actually...
Do you know what gets me about
trying to help Stephen Jones?
He was sort of going, so this is a bit inaccurate, you might want to... Oh, no, he did say, to be fair, he said... Virtually none of this info is correct. Poor research, and then leaves an article for the Times. Didn't tag Stephen Jones in it or anything, but
ooh. So River is very, very brave, aren't they, when they're picking on a lonely Twitter account? But you try and get them to help you out when you reveal that Marlon Yard is going to sail, and you've never met a bigger bunch of cowards in your life. So it was absolutely hilarious. I get banned from sail. And there was one real good guy who said this is ridiculous. I'll put your name forward, so we can get the weight of the rugby union writers behind you, and away we go. Everyone else was so scared of Sale Sharks they would not actually second me in, which was unbelievable. And and later on, I found out from multiple sources that they'd actually been covering up stories about certain players not being able to play because the clubs were so... Well, basically, the clubs are so powerful and so influential with what they write. So there was a story going around about a player who wasn't able to play because of an altercation that he got into. No one reported it. And yet, when someone says he's a fly half or he's a centre, not a 10, they go get the legal team involved. It's just... I mean, the standard of journalism is it goes from very, very good in some places to absolutely abysmal. In others, utterly abysmal.
I'd say not even the quality of journalism, but just the quality of communication skills on a social media platform. Why? I mean, there's two things. One, you put yourself out in the public eye. Like we're putting out a podcast, which means people can slag us off or not like us. That's the point.
That's
the point. We're putting opinions out there, and they're to be agreed with, disagreed with, argued with, commented on.
And the best part is, right?
But he's in a really prominent position, and I just think behaving quite petulantly.
And the best part is, I mean, you see it across all journalists. The Welsh Writers Association is probably even worse. I mean, certainly worse in terms of quality. But they give themselves awards. I mean, these are awards given to themselves by themselves. I mean, maybe we should start up like a rugby podcast awards and. You know, rotate it between rugby podcast ourselves and Flats and Shanks. I mean, that's maybe what we should do. And then we can tweet back him. And what we'll do is we'll do it monthly so we can soon get as many awards as Stephen James. And that's what we'll do. We'll pepper him.
We've won 15 out of the last 20 Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast Awards.
Yeah. I mean,
well, that is the reply to criticisms from before blocking you. He says, I've won 17 awards. What have you won?
Block.
Well, actually, we've won. I think, well, we've been 4 years now, so it's... So we've won, what, 12 times four, Phil?
48.
Yeah, 48. 48 times we've been Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast of the Month. That's it. That's outstanding work.
Back to back as well.
Back to back.
The standard stays high.
Yeah.
I might start an association, actually, like the rugby writers, but for podcasters and bloggers.
Is Stephen Jones allowed in?
Absolutely, he is. He's got a podcast.
Has he?
Yeah.
Is he on the Times?
It's a good podcast, to be
is
fair.
It? I'm not to be fair.
I went on that rant. I actually think Stephen Jones is one of the few people that actually says what he means. He doesn't care. He does what he wants.
I think you're probably right on the whole. He quite likes to be contrary.
Exactly, which I love.
Which is you sort of wonder, like, do you really think that, or are you just saying that because it's the opposite of the popular chain of thought?
Hmm?
But that's good.
Hey, 13 out of 13 doesn't like him.
Anyway, hopefully this week we will finally. In fact, can you look up, Phil, whether the Portugal Spain game is even still slated to happen?
I've just tried to find it. I couldn't find it listed as a fixture on World Rugby's.
Right, this is odd. Anyway, still rumbling on. There's still going to be fallout from this, but not a resolution made yet. Is pretty. Pretty amazing when it's, what, 3 weeks removed now?
Right. Wow. Well, there were two other European Cup games. Do you not wish it was still called the Heineken Cup? It was so perfect when it was the Heineken Cup.
No, I don't mind. It's interesting that Heineken are still...
The official beer partner.
Yeah, and they're still one of the... Well, no, I think they might actually be paying a similar amount.
You give the Heineken Man of the Match award at the end.
No, I'm pretty sure they pay a lot less.
They created different tiers of sponsorships. So Heineken are one of the kind of next tier down sponsors.
Oh,
but
really?
They wouldn't pay the additional money to get the single
titles,
named.
Titles,
yeah,
sponsor.
I think they increased what it costs to be the named sponsor.
Well, yeah.
And it's the issue with sometimes when you have a long running title sponsor is that no one else wants to be the title sponsor because it's like, well, no, people are just going to call it the Heineken Cup. I'm not going to pay an absolute load of money just for people to call it the Heineken Cup.
That is a good point, actually.
It happened with the... sorry to talk like my shop, but it happened with the radio awards. So the annual radio awards that I used to get nominated for every year was the Sony awards. And then when Sony said, we don't do this anymore, the whole thing went bust and they went to...
Because no one wanted to be the Sony's.
Because no one wanted to be the... Because it was
Panasonic
like...
Panasonic didn't do...
Everyone still calls it the Sony's now.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so I saw the end of the Claremont game.
Yeah. I watched most of the Claremont game.
What do you think?
This was a fun game.
Yeah, this was... so there's a couple of controversial moments that we'll talk about. Racing scored three tries, two of which were truly exceptional.
Mm.
One of which was definitely a forward pass that didn't get given.
Mm.
That Wayne Barnes...
Oh, I saw that one.
Is Wayne Barnes communicating purely in French
right,
for the whole game.
Right, Right, I'm glad you mentioned that because it's been driving me insane. So, back to rugby writers, actually, and the piousness of, oh, isn't it amazing that someone speaks French in French? No, it's not amazing. It's not amazing. You know, English is the most widely spoken language in lots of things.
So you should just speak English and louder.
Yeah. 100%, right? So... Like in aviation, you don't speak French when you're over France just because you're over France. You speak in English. Everyone has a common language. Companies do it too. If you're a German company working in China, employing Chinese people, you don't speak German. You speak English, right? For a lot of the Racing squad, their first language is English. You know, just talk in English. It's absolutely fine. And the amount, I mean, no one is clapping and cheering or saying anything about the fact that the Llanelli game in Wales wasn't done in Welsh. No one mentions it. Just do it all in English. It'll be absolutely fine. So, no. And also, Wayne Barnes isn't particularly good at French. He knows a few bits and pieces, but it'd be more appropriate if he spoke in English. That's all I'm saying.
Well, he made a couple of decisions. He made that one for Racing, which was the Dan Carter pass, mm-hmm. which Wayne Barnes and Stuart Barnes was argued. Stuart Barnes, in particular, was
Twitter
argued.
God, Stuart Barnes. He's his full title.
I very much like Stuart Barnes on Twitter. I think he was completely wrong on this. He was saying the hands went backwards, therefore, even if the ball went forward. Now, in my mind, the hands didn't go backwards. The ball went about 2 yards forward, and Dan Carter's momentum didn't continue. So, it definitely wasn't a try for me. But it wouldn't have mattered in the end because of the try they scored 2 minutes after, which was exceptional. Then there was the Benders disallowed try.
Benders!
Where he's deemed to ground it just short.
Ooh.
Which I can't help but think it was just short, and then kind of, as he continued to roll with the same momentum, it kind of brushed the line, so I would have given that. And then the Remy Grosso try, which was disallowed.
So he had a horrible last 10 minutes, didn't he?
Grosso.
Oh, awful. Like, everything went against him. I think he went at least a couple of penalties.
He knocked on a couple of times after that. But the try was very quick thinking, and then it got pulled back for...
Was it obstruction or something?
No, it was... Parra knocked the ball out of Greg Laidlaw's hand.
That's it, yeah, offside.
And it went back onto one of his players and came forward and hit Greg Laidlaw. So, letter of the law, yes, I would have been absolutely fine if you just don't go back and review that.
Yeah.
Because it was a bit of an awkward situation. And it was a nicely taken finish by Grosso. So Clermont will feel aggrieved at those decisions. But I think overall, Racing were the better team.
Mm.
And they have some superstars. Mm. I mean, Mark Andrew, his try... Well, he finished his try off very well, but for the Nakarawa try, and Nakarawa is exceptional.
Now, is that break, Andrew spelt funny?
It's spelt the French way, A-N-D-R-E-U.
So when you say Mark Andrew, I only think of one Mark Andrew. Mark Andrews, the old South African lock.
Oh, no, very different. Sure,
what a player he was.
This is the compact Racing and France winger.
Yep.
He was electric. They're just box office right across the board. Vakatawa, Carter comes off the bench. Machinode, Patrick Lombie.
Machinode's ace.
He was outstanding, actually.
He's
that
so
was
good.
A great battle between the two scrum halves. That was...
Yeah, well, the three scrum halves because
and it's going to be
Laidlaw came on.
Machinove Murray. That's a tasty matchup.
Ooh, tasty in more ways than one.
Yeah,
ooh la
two
la,
handsome chappies.
I just love Machinove.
Two French teams playing in a very, very entertaining game was like rolling back the years.
Yeah. So this Clermont team, nice to see. What's his name back? Your boy.
Oh. Fofana,
yeah,
so came off the bench.
He made that break, and I thought he's in here because he's meant to be absolutely rapid.
Well, he didn't give it, he didn't need to give it at the time. He did give it.
Yeah, I'd have kept it in hand.
And then Benders passes it to Grosso when Benders had no one on him, and Grosso was like 5 or 10 yards behind Benders. So there were two passes there that were not at the right time. They could have finished that off from their own 22.
Tell me this, is what's still there, the bouncer that plays fullback?
Spedding. I think he's injured as well.
There's some rumours about him coming to England.
Well, Sale is the rumour. I've heard categorically no, but That is a rumour. Mm. Oh, do you want to hear another rumour?
Yes, please.
Is it about Sale?
It's not about Sale.
Oh, go on then. Yeah, I definitely do then.
It's about my other team, Benetton. Allegedly, they're linked with Quade Cooper.
Love that.
So they'd have McKinley, Quade Cooper, and
Tommaso.
I can't say Thomas Allen.
Tommy Allen.
There you are.
Tommaso Allen.
Yeah. Now, you're right to bring up the decisions that went against Clermont. However, last week against Toulon, they missed 50 tackles and they missed 44 against Racing. So you don't deserve to win. If you miss 44 tackles, you don't deserve to win.
And Clermont, they have got some star names. And someone like Fofana coming back, and Camille Lopez was coming back as well, is brilliant for them. There's a load of names on that team that I just don't recognise.
No, I know.
Which is not like a Clermont
their
team.
Their home form. Is it right that they may not qualify for Champions Cup next year?
Well, they're in ninth.
Yeah.
Last time I looked, they were in ninth in the top
they've
14.
Lost four, I think since the new year, they've lost four games at home.
Yeah. And it's the compounding effect of multiple injuries. Yeah.
They've had an absolutely just diabolical year. But to not see Clermont in the European Cup next year would be a shame. Right, and one more game then.
And what a game it was.
Everyone was looking forward to most.
Certainly me. Just think. Okay, so I'll open up with this. Leinster, it wasn't a great performance. It wasn't like a world beating, like a star performance. What it was is it was consistently brilliant from minute 1 to minute 80. So it wasn't like the highest level watching the Hurricanes mixed with the Crusaders. But it's that constant grinding pressure with no mistakes. And as soon as Saracens put one foot wrong, done.
Well, it was quite a lot like the... And I think you're right to say that. It was reminded me quite a bit of La Rochelle v Scarlets in the sense that absorb pressure. And like an elastic band tightening, getting stretched back. Eventually, it's going to ping back. And that's exactly what Leinster did and what Scarlets did. And both those teams, massive load of internationals who haven't played since the last European Cup match, back together, and it took maybe 50 minutes. It wasn't their best performance, a little bit rusty around the edges, but still more than good enough to get the win.
Yeah. I couldn't help but think, kind of listening to this on the radio, then watching it again afterwards, I couldn't help but think if Leinster hadn't have scored that try after 3-4 minutes, because a lot of the first half belonged to Saracens, certainly in terms of territory and possession.
Absolutely.
And Saracens were forcing penalties out of Leinster. But that bit reminded me of the England-Ireland game a few weeks ago, where Ireland were incredibly clinical in that first half. Three chances in the 22, scored three tries. England, and in this case Saracens, repeat visits to the 22 and could only get the 3 points.
Yeah.
They could bend them, but couldn't break them.
But it's like, it was small errors. I mean, Makavunipola basically just needs to give the ball to Blair Cowan and he scores. And he just can't get his hands free.
Yeah.
It's unusual. And he throws the offload that he'd probably usually make.
I mean, Makavunipola, he worked so hard.
He's very good.
He works phenomenally hard.
Saracens are one of the best drill teams in the world.
Yeah,
and they mess up a line out on the opposition five. And if they score that, you've set up the last five minutes of just utter carnage.
Well, Jimmy George got taken off after 48 minutes or something like that, didn't he? Because they missed a few line outs, which was... It's un-Saracen-esque.
Yeah, I thought... Ezekwe was class, and I think probably one of the
he's still 19 by the way.
Is he? No.
Yeah.
And when I've stood next to him a couple of times,
he's 19. Are you sure about that?
Yeah. It's a pretty impressive specimen. Like, I know you say that about international rugby players generally, but like his hips must be like up to my chest.
Yeah.
He is absolutely massive.
Well, I mean, there are guys. I mean, there are big guys and there are big guys. I mean, I always thought when we went down to Twickenham to interview some of the England team, like, I know I've said this sometimes, but like Marler just felt like he was a monster. I mean, he's not actually that big statistically, but he felt presence.
He's not that tall, but it's his shoulders and his traps.
Yeah, and tell you the other one as well. It was George Cruz. Enormous man. In real life. And I don't know if the stats bear
next time out. You go and see, just look at the three Saracens guys that were involved yesterday. Cruz, Itoji and Ezekwe stood next to each other. Ezekwe is significantly bigger.
Is he?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
He's an absolute weapon and 19 years of age.
The other young lock on the other side.
James Ryan.
James Ryan. I thought he was absolutely brilliant.
Well, Daniel Lee. Is Daniel?
Dan Levy.
Yeah, that's not the... I'm just making sure that isn't the...
Dan Levy, Leinster's third...
that's Lord Levy, isn't it?
Dan Levy, Leinster's third choice seven, who would not have got a look in were it not for injuries to... They're two Irish internationals.
Yeah. And this is what I say all the time. It's about opportunity as much as talent. I mean, you could argue that they bring Sean O'Brien on, or they start with Sean O'Brien, they might not...
Josh Van der Fleer.
Yeah, they might not win that game.
Or Jordy Murphy.
It's
embarrassment of Richard. Yeah, that
Conan.
Levy was brilliant.
What I liked most about Leinster was how they picked on certain Saracens breakdown. So, like, occasionally, you know, Saracens would get some phases together, and as soon as they switched off at that breakdown, Leinster just piled men into it. It was very, very impressive. I don't know if they must have picked that up on some sort of like analyst stuff.
That Saracens kind of one breakdown in four or one breakdown in five.
Yeah,
don't
they
quite
could
guard
sleep
it.
And
yeah.
Phenomenal.
It's interesting. Actually, that seems to be where in the international level, if there is one thing that you could sort of characterises English teams' performances on the international stage and the club stage, that breakdown area, and it's been written and talked about a lot that the way that the game's refereed in the Avicii Premiership has sort of conditioned players to... There's no competition at breakdown.
I mean, I just say that the Avicii referees are basically the best. Like, they actually enforce the laws. Whereas I think other refs in other jurisdictions are nowhere near as good or professional. And I think, yeah, so there's probably something in that.
Yeah, I think there is, but... The point you made a few weeks ago when we were watching England, Tim, about that's fine. Referees will adjudicate games differently under different circumstances. Where teams will win and lose is how they react to that. Mm. And if you notice that the breakdown's getting refereed slightly differently, then you will be more solid on your own breakdown, but it creates an opportunity for you to disrupt other teams' breakdowns. And if you don't react to how the referee's playing the game, you don't deserve to win.
I just thought they were just very, very good at doing everything.
Yeah, they were. And a few players, just to pick out, Sexton, obviously, was exceptional. Apart from, with a blot on his copy sheet, which was that stupid kicking the ball away from the restart. I know.
Oh, and I tell you what, I thought he was lucky. Was it? So a couple of lucky things. One was a Saracens player who did not get a card. I can't remember what it was for, but it looked to me like it should be a card. Oh, it was like a shoulder charge.
Was it the Wigglesworth?
Yeah, that
no arm tackle.
Looks like a card to me all day long. And then Sexton's like, card him.
Yeah.
At that point, I want the referee to turn around and say,
you're off as well.
Yeah. No, he's not getting the card. You want the card? Okay, here you go. Right. That's what I want to happen. And the other one as well was, I kind of thought the Liam Williams challenge more than a penalty. He goes off for an HIA and he's done for the game. You know, that's not great.
I thought when the ref said, oh, nothing he could do about that, the guy slipped. I thought he was going to go, so play on. And I was about to do a big fist pump to the sky going, and I thought Garces was actually really good. I thought he officiated the game very well. But I was about to go, yes, exactly. Sometimes accidents happen. And if Liam Williams falls over, sometimes your head might end up in a place you don't want it to end.
Yep.
End up. But no, he still went. He slipped, so I'll just give a penalty.
If it's a penalty, it's a yellow card, isn't it?
Exactly.
It wasn't given either way, so I don't really care. Leinster have got to be the favourites for this whole thing, though. Although I don't think they'll beat Scarlets.
Well, it's the home. I think they'll learn from their mistakes last year in the home.
Go on. Just a little clip here of Dan Levy and his post-match interview, which I thought was quite good.
Is this it? I can't believe this has happened. I can't. And I just want to say thanks to Paul.
I think this is it, isn't it? Yeah.
I want to thank Mickey for training me.
Yeah.
We'll have you run!
Yeah, I love you too.
Yeah, that's it.
Most of all, I want to thank God.
Oh, I was just trying to get the clip of him going, yo, Adrian. Sorry, this is now taken for,
oh, wow.
For a very cheap gag. I didn't even get the clip I wanted.
Wow.
For a very cheap gag about how amazing Dan Levy's eye looked.
Yeah.
I've just taken up 30 seconds and it didn't pan out how I wanted. So
I'm not even
you get the idea. You get the idea.
The other two people to mention from Leinster side, two of the older guard.
Go on.
In the backs, Nasewa.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Has to be the best utility back in European rugby.
He's pretty good.
He's so good, just whichever position he plays. And Carney, I thought, was exceptional as well.
I thought Healy had a very good game.
What's
yeah.
He's having? Sorry, I got it wrong. Here's Dan Levy's post-match interview. There you go.
Very nice.
His eye was incredible. I loved it.
It was impressive. Now, I might have mentioned this jokingly during the Six Nations, but I do believe it. I think Brad Barrett is the best 12 in England. They should go back to Brad Barrett. They've only got, 18 months or so to the World Cup, and he is the best 12 in England, bar none. This conversation is now officially over.
The problem is
that's very Jones.
Yeah. No more opinions.
Blocked. I'm blocking any other opinion.
Yeah.
The problem, and I've said it before, I feel like we're going over old ground. The only way, in my mind, you can play with Brad Barrett is by having another ball player, which means you have to play Alex Goode.
Yes.
Which I know you're okay with that.
Done. In.
It does cause a few concerns for me in terms of high ball and some of his defensive stuff.
I thought he was very good, except for that one high ball when he turned his body away. Did you see that?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. And it goes back to like the... It was Watson at 15 for England against Ireland with the Sexton kick for the... it wasn't Carney, was it Ringrose who actually scored it?
Yeah.
But it's just... At that level, you've got to have someone who is so solid under the high ball. And there's no one better than Mike Brown in England at the moment. But I don't think you can play those two because you're lacking a ball player in the back
line. You need a ball player.
Yeah.
But Brad Barrett... I mean, Brad Barrett can actually play a bit. I mean, he's not completely one-dimensional.
He's not far off being completely
one-dimensional. No, that's very unfair.
Very effectively so.
He's getting better with age.
He's a great player.
What a story as well. It was brilliant. And I wanted to get a clip of Nick Mullins' commentary and put it over an instrumental version of Craig David's 7 Days, because it just sounded like a brilliant verse. We went, Brad Barrett broke his cheekbone on Sunday, had a scan on Monday,
took
him
a drink.
He had a titanium plate on Tuesday, and he trained on Thursday, and he played on Sunday.
Love him.
It would be...
That is incredible.
It is amazing.
That's getting stuff done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of people have come out now, a lot of sort of... smug Pro 14 fans going, oh...
Well, they should be smug.
No, absolutely. There's a lot of them coming out going, oh, what are you going to do now, England, to change... are you going to change the rules of the competition again? Because referring to the fact that England clubs had an issue saying, hold on, you don't qualify for the Champions Cup.
But it was the English clubs changing the rules which led to the improvement in the Pro 14. So, you know, it's basically an English victory anyway.
English-inspired victory.
An English-inspired victory.
Well, that was the two things I was going to say off the back of it. I'm going to go, one, the increased competitiveness of the Pro 14 has improved that as a spectacle. 100%. And has meant that these fringe players like Dan Levy have had more meaningful rugby before they've been thrust into big matches. And secondly, let's not get ahead of ourselves, because where were the Pro 14 sides the last five years
exactly.
in the final. They haven't been in the final for the last 5 years.
It goes inside.
And an English team has won the last two. But this possibly does form part of a bigger narrative about the way that the English club game is structured. But no, there's no salty English fans saying that.
Well, it sounds like
something's unfair. No, I'm not saying anything's unfair.
Okay.
That's my point is, let's not draw any huge, broad conclusions from one season.
Yeah.
Look, there's different structures that work for different nations. I think we know now that New Zealand have found the structure that works for their nation. Ireland have certainly found the structure that works for them. I think the Premiership works great for English rugby, despite what everyone else may think. It's a great spectacle, and it does produce a good international team. It's just a shame the manager and the coach of the national team hasn't really held up his side of the bargain over the last 6 months. But other than that, it's fine. Scotland have finally got their act together. And, you know, if Wales can somehow replicate this, and it feels like they're going in the right direction, good. It's absolutely fine.
Yep.
You know, there isn't one... I think we've learned enough from watching rugby over the last 10 or 15 years to say that one structure isn't right for everyone.
Yeah.
And changes get made and there are consequences. Australia look like they're possibly in a more positive space in terms of their club game with the Brumbies and the...
So, interesting. I'm glad you mentioned the Rebels because they were top of the overall Super Rugby table going into this weekend. They played my beloved Hurricanes in Melbourne. Have you seen the highlights of the game?
No.
No, because this is the first proper match they've had that's like tough team, isn't it? Did they get their ass handed to them?
So, after 30 minutes, Melbourne Rebels were leading 19-11.
Okay.
After 80 minutes, it finished 19-50. To Hurricanes.
Oh, ouch.
Including four tries for Ben Lamb.
Four tries? Wow.
Four tries for Ben
Lamb. That's impressive.
It was competitive up to 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And then Bowden, Geordie Barrett, Brad Shields, Gareth Evans, Lau Mappy. The kind of two-minute highlights is exceptional. And Ben Lamb, who ran in a couple of easy tries and a couple of good finishes. So that's probably... It really lets you know after kind of seven games and you're top of the league, you play the Hurricanes and you know where you stand.
Yeah, fair enough. The April Fool's gags, by the way, the one about Geordie Barrett and Bowden Barrett both coming to Quinns as part of the deal. Hey!
Didn't see that one.
There were some pretty.
My favourite.
Bowden Barrett could really learn a thing or two from the greatest player of a generation, Marcus Smith.
100% he could. Absolutely. 100% he could. My favourite April Fool's gag on Twitter this year, would you believe it, came from the humourless EU. Have you seen that one?
No, the EU.
Yeah. So the EU tweeted, or the European Parliament tweeted, all future European passports to be printed in dark blue from now on. Which I thought was excellent.
Yeah, that's good banter. Good banter.
We've got a full lineup of Premiership games, do we not, Tim?
Yeah, we do. Well, just very briefly, like quick 30-second takeaway on the semi-finals. Then we have Racing versus Munster in Bordeaux, as you highlight. Machinot versus Murray, two meaty packs. Gut feeling on what you saw over the weekend.
Machinot versus Murray.
So we have already seen, because these two were group stage, weren't they?
Yes,
we've seen this in Paris.
Yeah, Munster finished above them in the pool, didn't they?
Yeah, but Munster lost in Paris in a very, very close game.
I'd love to go to this game in Bordeaux.
Yeah,
when is it?
2 weeks away.
It's the Is it 21st of April that weekend?
I think we could go.
Yeah, it's not far away.
Will you be working? Do you think you'll get?
No, I'm not working that weekend. Well, I don't know actually because it depends on. It depends on where the matches are and which broadcaster gets what and who they can get to what venue.
They can get you to that venue.
No, but I'm sure I will. If there are, I will have. If I have a game, it will be a Challenge Cup game.
I'm not going to that. Keep it, mate.
Which is, by the way, it's King's home, Gloucester versus Newcastle.
Yeah, fine, whatever.
And two French teams, right?
So it's the weekend of the 20th, 21st, 22nd.
Well. I actually know who's going to win the Munster versus Racing game.
Okay.
And I'll tell you after Tim tells you about Cornerstone.
Cornerstone, the finest razor you can get. There are other pretenders that have come on the market since Cornerstone have been there. We've had a 3-year relationship with them. If you've just joined us to the podcast or you've been listening for a while, you'll have heard us talking about them. They are German precision engineered razors, top quality. Phil, you testify you use them quite regularly. They're a wet shave malarkey.
Very good, very smooth, and the just not having to worry about going out to the supermarket when you're desperate for a shave,
unlocking the safety cabinet.
Yeah,
because people can't be trusted around razors now.
Yeah,
none of that.
Delivered direct to your door, and I've recently been on because I had my beard. I had to postpone my subscription and then restart my subscription.
Oh, how was that?
incredibly easy website to maneuver. Very, very good service.
Because there's zero obligation. You're not tied into anything. You can come and go as you please. But to have a try and see why we are rave about it so much, you can try it for the ridiculously low price of £4 because you listen to us. And that will get you your 6 precision-engineered razors in a cornerstone presentation box. That will get you your free aluminium engraved shaft, engraved with your initials or whatever you would like, sent straight to you, £4. That's less than a pint. Give it a go by going to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Egg 10 at checkout.
Yes. So who's going to win?
In Bordeaux, it's going to be Racing.
Racing, I think.
They're just so massive, aren't they? And it's in Bordeaux and so on and so forth.
They've got the X Factor. Now, the X Factor, so they've got the enormous pack and the controlling halfbacks. They then have X Factor like Vakatawa, Mark Andrew, Leone Nakarawa.
God, yeah.
Munster, their X Factor, they've got Conor Murray, but they've got the kind of, their X Factor is more their team unit.
Their home ground.
Their home ground, yeah. Their fan base, their organisation, their set piece structure.
Do you know?
And Andrew Conway occasionally. But I'm not sure he'll do that again.
Ever again. I do wonder, though, like, you know, there is a sort of mercenary feel to Racing. You know, they're very good, they're very big, but they can be a bit soft. I just don't, that is not the case with Munster. I mean, anyone led by Peter O'Mahony, maybe, even though I just said Racing can win it, maybe it's that team unity and that, you know, they're not taking a step backwards. Whatever happens, they're not going backwards. So,
well, it's interesting because one of the best men for Racing, so Nakarawa was exceptional, but his starting second row partner, yes, Donica Ryan, he gives that kind of dogged edge. That,
why is
that
he not
solidity.
Playing in Ireland? Do they not want him? I'm sure they just didn't want him.
No, he wanted a payday.
But it looks like he's worth every penny someone's paying him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Whatever he's getting from Racing Metro, he's worth it. He's
Racing 92.
He adds that hard edge. So he's so big and so strong.
So the problem is, the Ireland team only need 2 second rows, basically. So you can't have every good second row playing for every team. It's just, you know, someone's going to have to miss out on second rows.
And the bonus someone's is, missed out on Tadhg Byrne will come in and he'll get loads of game time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good for Ireland.
Tadhg Byrne, Henderson, James Ryan, Toner, Ultane Dillan.
They're looking all right.
Apart from Toner, all those, I think Hendo is probably the oldest at about 25, 26.
Yeah, they're going to take some stopping.
And the other semi-final, Leinster v Scarlets in the Aviva Stadium. This could be a cracker. I think it's easier to pick a winner in this game, and it'll be Leinster at home.
We said that about the semi-final last year, though.
We did.
And it's, I would always back Leinster at home, but I've just got this niggling feeling about Scarlets.
I think Scarlets will do them. I really think Scarlets will do them.
And we'll see.
I think they will get better and better, and they. What's good for both of these teams is they're already qualified for the playoffs in the Pro 12, pretty much. So they can rest players as and when they need over the next few weeks building up to this. Oh, yeah. Should be awesome. It should be really good.
That is a big advantage, being able to manage your squad better. Yeah.
But it's not being played in Bordeaux, is it? That's the downside.
Yeah, it's being played.
That's what swings it for me. But as you say, the semi-final of the Pro 12 last year.
Yeah.
Interesting. Right, yeah, you're right. We do have a full complement of Avicii and Pro 12
games
this weekend.
Yes, we do. I'm very excited about them. Very excited.
Pro 14, I'll quickly fly through these. Friday night, we've got Edinburgh hosting Ulster.
Okay.
Which is a game I've been to the reverse. Well, I've been to that fixture last year and seen Ulster lose. Edinburgh are doing much better than they were last year. Ulster are doing even worse than they did last year. It's going to be one-way traffic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ospreys host Connacht, which is, I think, an Ospreys home win.
Ospreys win.
Cheetahs host Cardiff Blues, home win.
Yep.
Leinster host Zebre, home win. Scarlets Glasgow. Glasgow will have a full team out. Scarlets might take the opportunity to rest a couple of players.
I'm not sure they will. Oh, I don't know. Well, that's interesting. I'm thinking if you were going to play your full team, I would play them in this match and rest them next week.
Next week, yeah, you may be right. So that'll be. That's probably the game of the week in the Pro 14.
For sure.
I'd say game of the week is probably going to be Treviso Dragons. Because Treviso will win this. Means they've won 10 games in a season. They're currently, won 9, lost 9. This would, this is actually a real achievement.
Oh, yeah. It's
incredible.
It genuinely is.
We've been waiting for, I don't know, 20 years for something like this?
Question.
Yeah.
How much of this is down to Conor O'Shea taking control of things at a bigger picture level?
Yep.
And how much of this is down to your support, your continued ongoing support of Benetton from the start of the season?
I mean, the two things are almost inseparable. Mm. Now, I actually interviewed Dean Budd in the Rugby Dungeon last week, yep. Who is the captain of Treviso. And we spoke about this very thing, actually. And he said, interestingly...
About your influence.
Yeah. first of all, he thanked me. what he said is, interestingly, when... was it Mark Brunel? Jacques Brunel. Who's Mark Brunel?
I don't know.
He was a quarterback for the New York Jets, actually.
Yeah, not Mark Brunel. Third choice behind Sanchez and Geno Smith.
He was behind Geno Smith, and then I think he took over the backup role in New Orleans after that. Anyway, not him. Dean Bird had never actually met him. He'd never been to training, never been to games. Just doesn't see him. Conor O'Shea apparently is there all the time.
Yeah,
meeting people, chatting, doing Conor O'Shea style stuff.
Yeah,
and it all sounds very, very, very positive. But in terms of how it's all joined up there. It's Treviso, and there's no kind of pathway for the players. You're just at Treviso, or you're not at Treviso, and that will be that.
Mm.
So yeah, it was all rather interesting, but it's a real achievement, and I think that they'll hammer the Dragons.
And in summary,
fingers crossed.
Conor O'Shea's had a bit of an impact. JB's had a,
I think so,
had a fairly significant impact.
At least equal impact to Conor O'Shea.
At least. Right.
And then the final game, Southern Kings host Munster, which will be, I imagine, a reserve Munster team.
Yeah.
Because the distance they've got to travel, and they'll still hammer the Southern Kings.
Who have actually started to get a bit better of late, you know.
They won one, they beat Dragons in South Africa, didn't they?
Yep.
So, I don't know, read into that what you will.
The Dragons situation, you know, like, I was so hopeful they'd be able to turn it around. Just the good news of all the new players coming in. I think Jackman's got some real spark about him. But just to go on this losing, just losing and losing and losing.
Yeah. They threw in the towel this season.
But I mean, that's the most disappointing thing, isn't it? You'd have thought, with all the good news around the club and the new pitch and this, that, and the other, that they would kick on.
And
it's dreadful.
With players coming in, there should be an incentive for the existing players to want to prove, look, I'm the man in the shirt, I'm playing well, you've got to take it off me, rather than just rolling over and.
Yeah,
giving up.
So,
do you think Ross Moriarty must just check his phone after a Gloucester game every week? Oh,
here we go. Can't wait for this.
Oh no.
So, in terms of the Pro 14 table, right? Listen to this. In fifth place in the Leinster Conference is Benetton. Right? They after this weekend, hopefully, will have won 10, lost 9. Below them is Dragons. They have only won 2. The gap between Benetton and Dragons is absolutely bloody enormous. Having said that, Dragons will probably beat Benetton now.
Well,
and also they'll go ahead of Ulster.
If the predictions go as we've just said, Benetton will leapfrog Ulster.
I wonder if they can. They can't quite get Edinburgh.
No,
can they?
they're not going to get Champions Cup.
No.
Oh well.
Right, Avicii.
Friday night. We were talking about going to this one,
weren't
we?
I'm working there. You have a team night out there?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
It's your birthday weekend, JB.
All right.
Oh, hang on.
This is the Friday the 6th.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, I've been taken away for my birthday on Friday. I'm going to miss the Sale Wasps game at home.
Oh.
I'm actually devastated. Oh, no.
Where are you going?
It doesn't matter, does it?
It's not the AJ.
It would be the nicer a place you're going, and then hearing how disappointed you'll be to not be at the AJ Bell makes it funnier.
So I know. I spoke to Layla before.
Going to the Titanic Spa or something, which apparently
No. He's been flown with Ibrahimovic and Castro Giovanni to Las Vegas to go partying, and he would prefer to be in the AJ Bell Stadium.
I'd rather go. Yeah, I'd rather go to. to the AJ Bell this weekend.
Oh, no team night out then.
So
God damn it.
Predictions?
For the Wasps Sale game, yeah?
Yeah.
Sale will do them, I think. Well, it kind of depends what happens on Thursday. Because not many games rest on the fitness and availability of a winger. But I think Denny Solomona is just so important.
We are robbed of Solomona versus Wade.
Well, that's if he's found guilty of being homophobic.
Or having thrown out homophobic slur.
Yeah.
Same difference.
If he's
guilty, we're not going to see him probably till playoffs.
So what happened with Bastero, which I believe what's been alleged is the same word.
Yep.
Then Bastero pleaded guilty. I don't know whether it was caught, but there's no ref. Doesn't appear to be any ref mic or any other players that can.
So what do they do here? I mean, like, it feels to me.
Is it he said? He said. He said. She said. But
Well,
who knows?
I don't know how this works, right? Because if I'm him, and if I did say it, and there's no evidence, I'll just say no, I didn't say it, and then they say, well, he did say it.
Yeah,
it sounds like it's a foregone conclusion. This.
Well, it'll come up to whether anyone else has heard it, won't it? It'll come to.
And potentially, I don't know whether this happened, but possibly maybe Solomona apologised to the player on the night.
He didn't, did he?
So, from what I've read, Solomona and Shilcock, it was, made up after the game. But because Shilcock complained that was caught on the ref's camera after about 50 minutes, the Premier Rugby or whoever it was, they're kind of duty bound to investigate the incident.
When will these idiots learn? You whisper your insults.
Well, just pick another word.
Yeah.
No. Say what you want, but whisper
you're flipping
it.
Fool.
Yeah. Oh.
But whisper it.
You charlatan.
With your hand over your mouth as well, so not the cameras can pick up.
Then he's been homophobic again. You just assume the worst all the time.
Yeah, but there's no proof.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
the brilliance of it.
I don't think he'll, because Byron McGuigan was on the bench for the last game when Sale completely ripped Worcester apart, and that's a pretty able reserve. I don't think that'll make a difference. I actually also think Sale will win. Steve Diamond's been doing his Steve Diamond kidology thing, and he said after the Worcester game, well, that's probably the last game of the season we've won then. We're not probably going to lose the rest because it's all big teams we're playing, so that's probably it for us.
Yeah,
top four's way past us. We can't possibly do it. I think he's just...
Well, Steve Diamond doesn't...
He doesn't believe that.
Well, the only... He doesn't believe they're going to be in top four because they've not seen my Board of Destiny, which says, we're going to make the top four. I stand by that. So they're going to... They have to win this because if they don't, they're not making top four. They'll be making top six.
But I think they should be... They should be winning this game at home to Wasps, who...
They're beatable, aren't they?
Wasps are definitely beatable. Sale away to anyone is a big question mark. Sale at home to anyone is a... They should look to win.
Yeah. Actually going to go for Wasps, though. Because I think...
You're going to go to the game?
They've got the motivation from last year.
No, he's going to watch it on telly.
Maybe.
Of course.
We'll see.
The game's going to... I also think the Wasps fear Denny because he scored a hat-trick against them.
Yeah. Well, I think that's brilliant motivation. If you... were hammered last year and Denny scoring a hat-trick was a hammering. It's great motivation. And they'll also use the crazy, crazy Leicester game 2 weeks ago as motivation. So I think Wasps might sneak this.
There's a few motivated Wasps in that side. Gaskell, former Sale. Tom Cruise was let go by Sale and he's had a great season.
Yeah. Again, it's all about opportunity.
Hopefully Tommy Taylor's going to get back at some point soon. But I think Sale will sneak it. JB saying Sale, Phil saying Wasps. Saturday
we have 2 o'clock kickoffs. Bath hosting Leicester.
Oh, there's so many games. There's so much on it.
Is that the clash? Yeah.
The clash.
Give me Leicester.
Yeah.
Sorry, who are they playing against?
Bath Leicester.
Leicester. Oh my God, Leicester are gonna make top four.
Top four, yeah.
They're gonna make top four.
The standard
Death
Leicester.
Taxes and Leicester in the top four.
Jesus.
Then Northampton host Saracens.
That's such a tasty game that, because I think Bath probably can't make top four anyway, but if they lose that, there's a question mark over top six.
Yeah, there's already question marks over top six.
So if either team loses that, I think they're respectively top six or top four could be out of reach.
Agreed.
Ooh, huge.
The other 2 o'clock kickoff is Northampton hosting Saracens.
I wouldn't want to be in a Northampton shirt.
No. So Saracens, they'll be a backlash. And Northampton have received a couple of backlashes from Saracens this season.
Oh, yes, yeah. They have.
This will be every time Northampton look like they're doing all right, Saracens.
It's kind of like their little pick-me-up. You know, some people go on holiday or whatever. Saracens go and play Northampton.
Yeah. By the way, score 50 plus
points. By the way, since last week's podcast, I got tweeted a bunch of pictures of the lift tower outside Franklin's Gardens. I've never spotted it before. It is absolutely impossible to miss.
Yeah.
Somehow I missed it.
There's a glorious picture someone sent. It's right in the middle of the stand.
Right in the middle of the stand. About 150 feet in the air above the ground, above the stadium. Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, Saracens.
Then we've got Quins versus London Irish.
London Irish are always so motivated by this game. Even if they were already relegated, they'd be desperate to win this.
So they've got four games left. They're 10 points off Worcester, who've had they had their two good wins, and they've had, I think, three big defeats since then.
Seven losing bonus points is pretty good as well.
Oh, what the heck? I'm going to go for an Irish win.
I'm not.
Just because I'm trying to will that run
yeah.
in.
I don't
want... But a Tim Visser hat-trick for my fantasy team.
Yeah. I don't want it to be a foregone conclusion, the relegation. So I would like a London Irish win, even though I do like Quins as a team.
Magic Marcus is probably going to
score
a hatful of points against my fantasy team in the semi-finals. And
tell you what, some bloody big games coming up. I'm just looking at future fixtures now.
Then Worcester hosts Newcastle, which Newcastle had a great win away at Brive this weekend. They also freshened up the side a little bit, so I think Newcastle are going to comfortably beat Worcester.
The Newcastle A team, not that you can read in much into A teams anyway, but it's quite interesting. Like, they had a bunch of names. It just shows how strong the squad is now. They hammered Leicester, so like by 50 odd points.
Really?
Absolutely battered them yesterday. And they had lads like...
We say the A team, that would have been Leicester didn't have a game in Europe.
Yeah.
Newcastle rested loads of their first teamers, sent a team to Brive, and had another team which.
Yeah, it was like, Adam Radwan. Is that how you say his name?
They went to the. He was playing in Brive.
I'm sure he played. I thought he played yesterday. Maybe I'm wrong. Mimoz played for the A team. Dom Waldock played for the A team. They gave Leicester a bit of a pasting.
So Newcastle will win. To cement their top four spot, top three spot.
Well, if they win, I don't see how they don't make top four, really.
Yeah, I think Newcastle will comfortably win that.
Well, they're all playing each other in future weeks, as you've highlighted.
Well, so Leicester...
Friday, 27th of April, Leicester v Newcastle. Oh, tasty.
Well, and then Newcastle play Sale. Not this Friday, but next Friday.
Yeah.
Wow. There's some bloody great games coming up.
Right, and then final game.
On Sunday, 3 o'clock, Exeter host Gloucester.
Exeter.
Give me Exeter. Exeter
yes.
to...
That's a good weekend's, good weekend's worth of rugby, that.
Yeah.
Now all this European dross is out of the way.
So how long are you away for? Are you going to miss it all?
One night.
Oh, okay.
Are you playing on the Saturday?
Yeah, I've got to come home and play.
Yeah.
So that'll be that. And I'm going for some beers in town. Should be exciting.
Some birthday beers.
Birthday beers. That's right. Well, I think we've done a rather good job today, gents.
Yeah,
congratulations,
excellent,
everyone. Pats on the back.
Another award.
One
for you, Tim. One for you, JB. Yeah. And I think I'll give myself one.
That's right. There you go. Three awards in one podcast.
Come and be blocked by us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. come and look at, pictures of our awards on Instagram and Facebook and everywhere else you can find us. Tell your mates, subscribe, and thanks for listening. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.